Absolute Rally with Tony Simpson and Ryan Champion.
Hello everyone, welcome to the second show of 2016 for Absolute Rally. As ever, we're trying to pack so much in. Thank you so much, by the way, for the feedback from last week's programme. I genuinely, it's weird when you're doing this, and it's weird when you're kind of doing the interviews and talking to people and stuff. You miss out so much, and some of the Ari Vatanen quotes, I think there was just, everything that Ari said could be put on a t-shirt. I think that was somebody that sent me a private message, and I completely and utterly agree with that. So it was a pleasure to have Ari Vatanen on the programme last week, and obviously talking about all the things that are going to be coming up, and obviously we briefly touched upon Monte Carlo with Rich Milner from the service park, and we're going to be talking to Craig Parry a little bit later on, of course, Elvin Evans's new co-driver, who had an epic WRC2 victory and pretty much controlled it throughout, and I'd be interested to get Craig's view for what's going on for this year for WRC2 and also for obviously the upcoming British Rally Championship and a few other bits and pieces that are going to be going on. But without further ado, we always start the programme with a little bit of news, and as I mentioned last week, we're going to have Jack Bennion from Motorsport News, who's going to be kind of just blasting through the headlines of Motorsport News on a Tuesday, obviously when this drops into your little podcast hole, so to speak. You'll be reading and flicking through the pictures and words and everything else that you'll find in Motorsport News. But anyway, without further ado, Jack, welcome back to Absolute Rally.
Hey, Tony. Thanks for having me back.
No, it's no problem at all. Obviously, you did a good job first time round, so it would be rude not to have you back.
Not sure about that.
Oh, well, there you go. But Ryan is going to be joining us a little bit later on in the programme, so Jack is going to be going through the headlines. He's going to be doing the newsy stuff with me. Ryan and I are going to talk Monte Carlo a little bit later on. But at this point, as I say, is where Jack comes into his own, and we're going to talk about what's coming up in the Bible, as we refer to it as Motorsport News. Now, the cover obviously is Monte Carlo. Now, the big story for Monte, was it Chris's win, or potential win rather, if only it would have been a win? Was it the fact that Ogier got 3 out of 3, or was it the fact that what happened with Yari Matti?
I think Meek's the big story, and that's what we've kind of gone with our 2-3, which is the obviously the first two pages of the newspaper. Meek was just incredible. I don't think anyone expected him to be so close to Ogier, especially in the first couple of days before the problems.
I think, you know, and I suppose people will always argue, and listen, we're pro Chris, and we've had Chris on the programme and everything else, we're pro every rally driver, but, you know, Chris has been on and obviously a big supporter of what we do here, so we're probably slightly biased, which we shouldn't be, but we are, and I apologise for it to our overseas listeners. But obviously Chris isn't fighting for a championship, so the handbrake, if you pardon the obvious pun, has been let off, and he could go out and express himself, and maybe, you know, Ogier was thinking championship. But is that a fair thing, do you think?
Yeah, I think you're probably right. I think Ogier, he was keen to add at the end of stages when he'd taken it a bit easier than before. And I think he was struggling to keep it so easy because Meek was so quick. But I think everything we heard at the end of last year about Sitchin not really developing the car and not really looking to do too much of the DS3 this year, for Meek to come out that sort of explosively at the start of the rally was a real shock to everyone, I think.
I think the other element is that people weren't expecting it, so it put people on the back foot. So they weren't expecting it. They weren't expecting that kind of pace. But I genuinely was. I didn't have Chris down as perhaps as close, but I genuinely thought out the blocks he was going to be probably the only real rival to Sebastian Ogier. I was a little bit shocked, and I want to talk about this as well. I was a little bit shocked by Yari Matti. Now, not to do with the incident that happened, we'll talk about that very briefly shortly, but as I say, I watched the preview programme before Monte Carlo, and I know he was full of cold and everything else, but there seems to be almost a body language, and again, I love the body language stuff, and I'm into the mind management and stuff like that. I do find it fascinating, but I genuinely got the impression that he'd almost, I think probably the best way analogy I can remember is when we had Loeb and Sordo in the Citroën team.
Yeah.
And Danny Sordo kind of accepted things, perhaps. And I kind of had this, I don't know, again, he was full of cold, so perhaps I'm being unfair, but I had this thing that perhaps he's almost relaxed, or not relaxed, settled into that number two role, should we say.
Yeah, well, I think I'm in the minority in saying that I think Latvala was doing the right thing early in the rally, because he wasn't going to challenge Ogier for the win in Ogier's backyard, especially in those tricky conditions. And I think he started a lot of years 25 points down on Ogier and teammates straight away. And to go in and just conservatively try and hold for a podium, I think was very intelligent, actually.
Do you know what? I'll have that. That's a very, very good point. Now, what's your take, and what's MN's take, rather, I suppose, on the incident that happened with Yari Matti?
Well, with incidents like this, it's our job to state the facts. So in terms of the actual story we've printed, it's very straightforward in stating what's happened. You know, obviously, Yari had the incident. It was a quick right-hand corner into a culvert, and he's unfortunately hit a spectator, which is, you know, a massive shame. And David Evans has put something up on Autosport today, actually, talking about safety, which I think is obviously paramount in this day and age.
I think what I find, and again, I may be speaking off here, but, you know, I think where Yari ended up, I think, was one of those incidents, as you say, that where he went through the culvert and everything else, you know, water filled and everything else. I don't think it was an official photographer, so there was no tabard in play. And, you know, obviously over in the UK, and quite rightly over you know, the last 12 months or so, you know, spectator safety has been such a big, big thing. But certainly watching some of the coverage from Monte Carlo, there was times where you'd raise an eyebrow and you'd say, really? You know, we know what's gone on over here in the UK recently.
Yeah.
Would that be accepted over here? I don't think it would be.
I'm not entirely sure. And I think there's still a lot of rallies that do need to improve their safety, and you know, not picking out Monte Carlo specifically, but I think there's always things you can do to improve safety in any sport. And I think that rallying specifically needs to continue and not get to a stage where we're stagnant in developing, you know, safety. We need to continue moving forward. And I think Monte kind of reminded everyone of that at WRC level.
Absolutely, absolutely. Listen, blasting on anyway, again, staying with Volkswagen, and I suppose it's been the first chance for the drivers perhaps to express their views with regards to, obviously, Jos Capito's departure from, or impending departure for Formula One and for McLaren. Now, Ogier doesn't seem too worried by it. He seems to think it's business as usual, but he still says it was a shock, apparently.
Yeah, well, I think, he does state in the quotes that it was a shock. It doesn't seem that the drivers were expecting the move, and that kind of backs up what we were saying last week. But I think Ogier is happy enough at the minute, because there's no sign of Capito leaving anytime soon. We know he's going to McLaren, but they've got to find a successor soon, and I don't think there's going to be any sort of implications for the Volkswagen drivers for a while yet, until they actually find a successor for Jos.
Okay, happy days. Right, cracking on. Hyundai, we always have, to be fair, historically last year, we always had a Hyundai corner. And if anything, it was uneventful, which I think is probably good for them. You know, I know there was a few stage end quotes from Danny Sordo with regards to car setup and things like that. But I think it was a solid, more than solid debut for the new car.
Yeah, I think the thing to point out with Hyundai was, I think they were taken surprised by a bit, because a lot of their pre-event testing was done on snow. So I think when they actually started the Monte, and there was quite a few, I think either the first stage or the second stage was a bit drier than expected. And I think that caught them out a little bit in terms of the setup. I think they were set up a bit after doing the snow testing and weren't really ready for the car to be set up for tarmac. So yeah, I think they struggled with the handling quite a bit. But I think it ended up being quite a good weekend. I mean, Neuville set two quickest times on the Saturday, and there's definitely pace in the car. You can't expect it to challenge Volkswagens on the first event out. I think that'd be stupid, really.
No, absolutely. Chris as well, Chris Meek, won't be doing every round that Citroën does in WRC.
Yeah, that was a bit of a shock to us, really. It's something we kind of assumed that Chris would be doing all the rounds that Citroën did in the WRC, but we've got some quotes that suggest otherwise, and that the time will be shared around the three drivers, as Maton refers to him, which is obviously Lefebvre, Breen and Meek. So that was quite a shock to us.
I liked seeing Craig on the TV coverage talking about tyre options and also the strength of what an ice crew does as well. I thought it came across very, very well.
Yeah, I think Meek's very, Breen's very personable, and I think he does come across well with that sort of thing, definitely.
So, obviously, Craig was out there. I seen a new photograph with him with the new overalls on and everything else. He looks the part, and I can't wait to see him on Sweden now. Apparently on page 11 of Motorsport News this week, there's going to be a picture caption competition with Francois Delacour, of all people. Now, I've not seen this picture yet, so I can't wait now to see page 11.
It's not a competition. It was just an excuse to talk about Delacour a bit, I think. David Evans has picked out a picture of Delacour around the hairpin in his older spec. Spec S 2000, so we just found a way to get that in there somewhere and do a bit of a description of that as well.
He's mega. He's one of the very few people that I've approached to talk to, and just the stare just scared me. And it never quite happened, but still, there you go. Malcolm Wilson talking about Elvin and Craig Parry's results. Obviously, Craig's going to be coming up a little bit later on. Apparently, Malcolm quoted the saying, "It's his best yet."
Yeah, definitely. I mean, Malcolm's been really vocal with praising Elvin, and I think that's right to say. I mean, I won't delve too much into it. I know you're going to speak to Craig Parry later on and go into a bit more detail of Evan's win. But yeah, basically, our story is just, you know, Malcolm stating how well Evans had done, especially against adversity throughout the rally.
Yeah, and something else which is in this week's issue is going to be coming up later on in our programme, because we're doing a few bits and pieces that I recorded at Autosport Show a couple of weeks ago now. But David Higgins missing the opening round of Rally America, because one of the Rallycross boys is going to be taking his seat, and Craig Drew is going to be sat with him.
That's right. Yeah, he's going to miss the Michigan round, the first round, which is on snow. So I'm not sure how he feels about that. I haven't spoke to him yet, but I'm sure he'll be happy with it.
I think he's getting more global rallycross rounds. So it's quite interesting, actually. I urge, and I know obviously the way we do stuff, we might as well remove the smoking mirrors. Obviously, you've not heard the full program yet because we're recording this bit now. But listening to Craig Drew talking about being David Higgins is spotted in rallycross. Amuse me, because to say he's passionate about the job is an absolute understatement, and he got very, very vocal in our interview about what goes on in rallycross and what happens to his driver. Still called him his driver as well.
I'd love to stand next to Craig while he's doing that. I think
do you know what, even on the stand at Autosport, it was just hysterical. But he's again very, very good fun, and so I just wanted to just quickly blast through a couple of stories. Again, we've been talking about the international flavour that we've got coming to the British Rally Championship, and one thing which was kind of lacking and will be announced by the time this podcast drops is the TV deal.
That's right, yeah.
Have you got something in Motorsport News this week about it?
We have, yeah. We've got a page dedicated to the TV programmes. It's going to be half an hour on Channel 4, which, you know, to be for the BRC to be on terrestrial television is massive in its first season, and also an hour on BT Sports as well, which is quite renowned for being good for sports. So I think I'm really pleased with the package they put together so far.
Again, old fellas like me and Ryan and Craig Breeny loves his old BRC coverage as well. Exactly. We'll remember watching the BRC on Channel 4 on a Saturday morning, because that's when it's going to be on. So for me, you know, it's like going back 20 years, which some people may say that's a negative, but I think everything needs to have a familiarity about it, but doesn't necessarily have to be the same for people to feel good about it. And I think that's what this deal does. I really do. Just blasting on again, I suppose, going from our international drivers, we had Tom Cave, of course, who's done the DMAC Drive Trophy. Again, linking in quite nicely, Craig Parry was his co-driver back in those days. And he's announced, or he's going to be announcing, he will be doing the full British Rally Championship this year with his main protagonist, or rather the co-driver that was his main protagonist, who was Sander Parn, and his co-driver was James Morgan, and now those two are teaming up for a full BRC campaign.
That's right. We didn't really see James Morgan coming. I mean, Tom told us last year that he would definitely be at the first round of the championship, so we knew that would happen, and a lot of people expected him to do the rest of the year. I prefer to wait to find out exactly what's going on from the driver, and he's announced it now, so he'll be doing the BRC with James Morgan, which is, yeah, like you say, a bit of a surprise, really, considering the rivalry they had in 2014 in the Drive DMAC Trophy with Xander Parn, and James Morgan's going to carry on with Xander in WRC 2 as well, so he's going to do both, a bit like Elvin Evans, really.
Yeah, fantastic. Now, just going back to that DMAC Drive Trophy, Oshan Price, who over this past week has been selected as part of the MSA Academy, I believe.
That's right.
And he's also awaiting to see whether he gets selection for the DMAC Drive Trophy in WRC, and if he gets selected, he will be there.
Yeah, it's a bit of a strange one, really. Most championships, you know, if you want to do the BRC, you get the money together and you go and do it. With the DMAC Trophy, you have to be selected. So what we've got is Ocean effectively saying he will be doing the Drive DMAC Trophy this year, providing that he gets selected. And we've also got some nice quotes from Malcolm Wilson, who suggests that Ocean's definitely one to watch for the future. So that's nice as well.
I think so. I think, again, you know, I've known him for such a long time, and he's such a lovely lad as well. And I don't say that in a condescending way. He's just always got a smile on his face, and he's always working to put something together. And, you know, he's been around the BRC for many, many years. You know, people probably don't realise how many stage miles he's done, to be perfectly honest with you. But, you know, he tried to do the JWRC last year. It didn't quite work out for him. I think it was, you know, I think quite a few drivers from Ireland and the UK tried to do it. I just think it was just a step too far financially for lots of them, especially with having to buy the Max upgrade as well, which wasn't a cheap update for that DS3. But no, we'll keep everything crossed for him. Now, just I just want to very, very quickly blast through these last couple of points. I'm staggered by this one. Again, another guy who's been around BRC and done some national rallies, especially the Scottish and the BTRDA National Rally Championship over here in the UK. Ewan Thorburn, to do BRC in a T16.
That's right, yeah. He's got himself a 208 T16 from Peugeot France, so he'll be doing the whole championship.
Wow. Out of all the R5 cars, that would have been the one that perhaps I possibly would have went,
but do you notice how I left you to finish that yourself and didn't intervene in the gap there?
Yeah. That's I there's a word for that, but I can't say it because we're part of a program. So
well, you don't know how much development Peugeot have been doing with the car over the, you know, they spent the year in the RC last year, and I know Craig had a few problems with the car at various stages, but you don't know how much development they've done through the year and how much they've done over the winter break. So I think I'll just be hanging on a little bit. Maybe it is a surprise move, but I think I'll just be hanging on a little bit just to see how he gets on in the first couple of rounds, and hopefully Peugeot have done some good work to that car.
No, I hope so. It'll just be interesting to see, obviously, because it kind of, I think there was some dovetailing. Now, obviously, Keith Cronin's going to be running a DS3 R5 in the Irish Tarmac Championship, which we're going to talk about very, very briefly. And obviously, there were some crossovers between those two cars. I know that for very, very obvious reasons. But it is nice to have, you know, I've seen certain accusations in certain quarters from a negative point of view that this new British Rally Championship is almost like a Fiesta R5 one-make championship, which I think it's a million miles away from that, but it's a very, very easy thing to say when there's a predominantly one particular shape of car. So to see something new and fresh, I completely embrace it. And you know, obviously we've got Neil Simpson with the Skoda R5, we've got Desi Henry with the Skoda R5 as well. So to have another R5 there, I think it's amazing. I just wish, genuinely, I wish you and all the very, very best with it. And I just hope all those problems that blighted Craig's year last year have been ironed out for him. But again, just moving on very, very quickly, there's a section that you've wrote which is very eloquently put with regards to, again, we've got massive listenership over in Ireland, so it seems amiss of us not to mention this, is what's going on obviously over in Ireland with regards to the, you know, the R5 and the Super 2000 cars. I suppose the easiest way of describing it is it's followed the same path as the British Rally Championship and ERC.
Yeah, pretty much. Well, what's basically happened is WRC cars no longer score points towards the overall championship. They'll still win. They can still win the overall events in the championship, but they can't score points towards the championship. They actually score points towards their own WRC Cup, which is effectively like a class. So if they want to compete in the championship, they can. They can still win events overall. They just can't win the overall Irish Tarmac Championship.
Wow. Well, again, that's kind of has a familiar feel to it. I seem to remember the BRC being a bit like that, where world cars were in, or Group N cars were in, but it was only F2 cars that could actually win the championship, or something along those lines. Again, Ryan will put me straight on that a little bit later on. And one last little story, who's going to be joining us very, very shortly. We've just done something with Chrissy Ingram, talking about European Rally Championship, and Chris's selection by Team Opel for the Adam R2 drive. Yeah, he was a mega excited young man, having just spoke to him.
Definitely, yeah, he's really over the moon. And it's funny, actually, because Chris was the subject of the first rallying feature I ever wrote in my career. So for both of us to sort of be moving up the ranks a little bit is really nice. But Chris was mega excited, and to get a works deal in Europe these days is very, very unusual. So I think we need to accept that that's a brilliant move for his career. You know, ERC Juniors might not be the most competitive championship to go and do, but to be in a works car in a European championship is just mega, I think.
I couldn't agree more. Right, Jack, this is where we have our partner of the ways. As I say, we are going to we segue quite nicely now, because as Jack leaves us, we're going to be crossing over and we're going to be talking to Chris Ingram about this amazing championship and this amazing experience which he's just been rewarded. So, without further ado, we'll take a short break and then we'll be back with Chris Ingram.
Team Coordinate, your perfect travel partner for all your European, Manx and Irish motorsport travel. Whether you're a competitor, marshal or a motorsport fan, we have the connections and discounts available for ferry travel to and from the UK. Team Coordinate, we can cater for individuals, teams or group bookings. Working with organisers of race, rally and classic touring events, we take away the hassle of travel with bikes, cars, trailers and trucks. Accompanied or unaccompanied. Team Coordinate. Call Dane or Donna now on 44 1904 766787 or email us on info@teamcoordinate.com.
I suppose we should welcome back to Absolute Rally, because we've not spoke to him for a while. In fact, he was on the very, very first programme when we first brought back Total Rally, our old name, but our new name, our second show of 2016, and a man with some news, and some man with some news from the European Rally Championship. And of course, friend of the show, Chris Ingram, welcome back to Absolute Rally, mate.
Thank you very much. Good to be back.
It is good to be back. You've been almost conspicuous by your absence. You've been a very quiet boy, man, child, whatever you want to call yourself, but a man now. You're definitely a man now. I've watched you grow up, not literally, that'd be weird, but I've watched you grow up over the last few years, and obviously you've had your trials and tribulations, but nice little bit of news this week. So the Absolute Rally fans, if you've not heard, Chris is going to be back at doing the ERC, and he's going to be with a new team, new co-driver, new surroundings, and you must be a very excited man, Chris.
Yeah, very excited. Old Paul is who I'm driving for, and they won the championship last year. They're actually my main rivals. So I saw how strong they were, you know, the passion, and they're just driven to succeed. I went over to the factory after Barham, and they offered me this opportunity to take over from Emil Bergqvist, who won, really, because he's moving to R5. And it was definitely the best opportunity and chance to try and win the title this year, so really exciting.
Was obviously, you know, we're used to you like any young driver, you're very, very kind of social media focused and stuff like that, and there had been this quiet spell, and it was one of those moments where it was only last week I was thinking, I've not seen him at Autosport, which is unusual. We didn't have our normal back and forth. I thought, shall I drop him a text and see what's going on? I thought, no, I'm going to leave him, because something must be going on, because as I say, I just had this feeling of water. How long's this kind of been confirmed for you, or is it literally just being confirmed?
I've been in talks since Barham. That was when I went to meet them. So everything's just started to come together slowly, and now I went over to meet the team, all my mechanics and engineers and my new teammates, who everyone's German. So that was going to be pretty cool to work with really focused people, but yes, next week's Latvia, so it's all happening pretty quickly now.
I'm going to be interested to see how your Mancunian German accent develops throughout the year. That's going to be fascinating. Obviously, you've had Gabon, who's no longer sat with you. We'll talk about that in a second. And you did kind of have this kind of mix of almost pace notes. Now, you have got a new co-driver for this year. Tell us a little bit about her.
Yeah, she's called Kat Becker, and she's a very experienced lady. She's done junior WRC with English notes for several years. So for me, she's got the full package, and I've met her. She's awesome. So I'm really looking forward to working with her, if you can call it work.
Yeah, is this going to be, are we going to have some random German words, and has Gabon put random French words in for you, or are you going to stay 100% English this time?
I think English, because she probably speaks better English than me, so
yeah. I'm not going to deny that, Chris. I'm not going to deny that. But no, I think, you know, I genuinely had it in my head, and this is where we all take kind of guesses at this stuff, and you know, the European Championship has kind of been reinvented itself after what happened with IRC and stuff like that, and I just wondered whether the lack of announcements of what you were going to be doing perhaps came down to of you arriving at BRC with something. Was that an option?
I've thought about it, but you know, this has been going on for quite a while, and I just love competing in the ERC. The events are awesome. The coverage is really good, you know, for the publicity and for partners. So, but yeah, BRC, I have to say, is looking awesome, and you know, the amount of entries and interest is really good. So I'm as a British rally fan, I'm really happy that it's going to be strong, and I definitely wouldn't say no to doing the odd event this year if the opportunity came about.
I suppose you potentially will cross swords on the likes of the circuit though as well.
Yeah, exactly. I'm hoping that it'll run as an international so I can actually register and have a go at some of the junior BRC guys, but I don't know what's going to happen with that yet.
Okay, have you, just that brings us quite nicely to, do you know what your programme is this year? Do you know what events you're doing? Are they all in the diary now, or is it still kind of event by event?
Well, the target's going to be win the junior ERC, so I'll be focused on that mainly, but we're also going to do WRC Germany and a few national events over there, so.
Fantastic.
A lot more to be confirmed, but that's what's confirmed so far, which is just awesome. We're going to get the seat time that I need.
I was just about to say, it brings us quite nicely round to the car as well. Have you done a test yet?
No.
Okay.
I got my first test next Tuesday in Latvia, so it'll be interesting.
I find this Adam very, very, very interesting. I know pace-wise it was very, very quick last year. Again, maybe this is my lack of knowledge, certainly, but the gravel development on that car, where is it at?
To be honest, on Estonia last year, which was the last gravel event, I think Bergqvist had the pace to win, but he just had to finish to win the championship, so we didn't really see how quick the car could go on gravel.
Yeah.
So I won the other gravel round in the Azores. So, yeah, I think it should be, like, the suspension, it's on Ryder suspension, so it's another step up from the 208, really. So I can't see it being any slower. It'll definitely be just as good on gravel. It's definitely quicker on tarmac.
Fantastic. Listen, Chris, I always ask you this every year. Well, when I say every year, certainly since we've been back anyway. Are you going to be a friend of the show again? Are you going to report in from ERC rounds and let us know how it's going?
If I'm allowed.
Of course you're allowed.
Definitely,
yeah. You know it's an open door policy here, my mate.
Thank you.
Listen, I'm going to let you crack on. I'm genuinely really, really pleased for you. And listen, just go and bring the title home this year, right?
That's the fine. Thank you very much, Tony.
This is Absolute Rally with Tony Simpson and Ryan Champion.
And welcome back to Absolute Rally, and I suppose welcome back to Absolute Rally. I suppose we weren't Absolute Rally last time I spoke to Craig Parry, because it was at Autosport Show in 2015, and at that point he was scratching around wondering what he was going to do. He went and did the DMAC Drive Trophy again last year with Tom Cave, and unfortunately it didn't quite work out for them, but this year he wasn't at Autosport scratching around. He was over in Monte Carlo getting ready for what's probably going to be the busiest year of your life.
Indeed.
So, welcome back to the programme, Craig Parry. Anyway, listen, congratulations, before we go any further, on what was just a staggering WRC2 victory.
Yeah, it was a debut for me with Elvin, and obviously the new M-Sport R5 Evo, it couldn't have gone any better.
Yeah, you know, we're looking at, obviously we'll talk about the stages in a second, but even so, you know, it's 2 minutes 13, 2 minutes 14 seconds, I think, when I had a quick glance at the stage times that at the end there, that, you know, that's a lifetime. You and I both know that in rallying, but it could have been so much more.
Yeah, it could have been, and the rally didn't start as we'd hoped. We picked a punch up 14Ks from the end of the first stage, which Elvin made the decision to drive out, and looking on hindsight now, it was probably the right decision. Having only lost, I don't know, a minute and 40, was it, I think, to Gilbert by the end of the evening. Then the second stage again in the dark, we caught the car probably just under a kilometre from the finish, so he wouldn't let us pass. Okay, it wouldn't have cost us a huge amount of time, but it's still the distraction coming to him and seeing him and such on. So yeah, it could have been considerable amount, and we had another puncture as well on Saturday morning in the long stage, which we had to stop and change. So our 1 minute 40 lead went to a 6 second deficit, which was a bit of a head scratcher really, because we haven't really understood how we got any of the punches either. So it was just one of them things.
I know it sounds, obviously it was the first event with Elfin. It seems obvious, but practicing puncture changes, you know, tyre swaps, is that something that happens as part of the course anyway leading up to the event?
Yes, we had a day at M Sport just to sort of go through the car with our seat fittings and everything like that, and tyre changing procedures is one of the things that we practiced for, I don't know, probably maybe a half hour, 45 minutes I think it was.
So what have you got it down to now? What's the fastest change? Come on.
Well, it's a little bit different in the workshop to the actual rally, but the rally I think we roughly think it was about a minute and 40.
Wow.
From start, stopping, on the move again. And we probably could have done it a little bit better, as we had to wait for the jack to put the second spare wheel in. So we're currently looking to get the jack moved. So we probably could have shaved maybe another 10 seconds off that, I think.
Fair play, fair play. Now, I said this on last week's programme when I spoke to, after I spoke to Elf, and he gave us a couple of minutes when he was at Autosport with regard to the BRC programme, but there's definitely a look in his eye. And it's a very, very easy thing to say after he's just had a good result on WRC. So where I said it before he went to Monte Carlo, there is definitely a look in his eye and a steely determination to put a few wrongs right as far as he's concerned.
Yes, for sure. He has made... he hasn't admitted in the fact at all that he wants to get back into the World Championship and a World Rally Car, and his determination to get there is tenfold. So... you know, he's doing everything we can. We've only been given two rallies confirmed by M Sport or by Malcolm for the championship, and basically we have to try and win both of them. So there's one down, one to go, basically.
Yeah, and that seems to have suited Elfin, because as I say, you know, I know he was quick on tarmac last year, but we really didn't see that, you know, as much as I think we didn't perhaps see Chris Meek doing what he did with Ogier at times. I really didn't see Elfin being in that position where, you know, we're talking minutes in hand, you know, not seconds.
Yeah, it's, I mean, you know, don't get me wrong, Elfin is a definitely a world championship driver, you know. You see the calibre of the guy and the work ethic he puts in. He has one goal in mind, and that's to win. You know, so after doing the shakedown with him, and we did a test as well, he is a different league, you know, to a lot of the other drivers around and about. But also with Monty, there's a lot of equations that go into it as well, with the weather, and we have a gravel crew as well, which we rely heavily upon, who have done a fantastic job over the weekend helping us with tyre choices and this type of thing. And we pretty much, looking back over the weekend, I'd say we've got everything pretty much spot on.
I think that's an understatement, to be honest with you. from a debut point of view. Now, again, this is something I know, but probably our listeners won't know. Obviously, Dan Barrett, who'd sat with Elfin for the last couple of years, I know you and Dan were quite close anyway, and obviously you did some of the gravel notes for Elfin last year. So making that transition over and replacing Dan with regards to notes and stuff, was it relatively an easy transition?
Yeah, well, I mean, that's a big pair of boots to fill anyway, so for a little chap. but no, last year definitely helped me going out to do the gravel notes and sort of seeing the insight of how they work and how his personal system was working, and also the sort of information that he'll have in the system as well to describe the weathers, you know, whether it be ice or snow or wet or damp or whatever. So that gave me a really good insight before we'd even started. So it just made things a lot easier to get the transition in. But in saying that, I remember when I had the phone call about going, and we found out that Monty was the first rally, and I was like, we couldn't have found an easier one to start with.
So obviously Elfin's gravel crew was as last year he had his old man driving, so yep. Gwyndaf was out driving, and obviously a little bit of another bit of a Welsh legend as well, Phil Mills was basically doing your gravel notes for you.
Yeah, we've had quite a patriotic team this year, I think.
I was just about to say, it couldn't be any more Welsh if we tried, could it?
No. Yeah, they've done a great job, and obviously, especially with somewhere like Monty and Phil's experience there over the years and stuff, it's such a comfort as well for myself. Just, you know, if there was anything, you've got him at the end of the phone just to reassure you with stuff or to give you, you know, a bit of advice on whatever. So, yeah, I'd say we definitely had probably one of the best gravel crews there.
It's just, as I say, I think, again, that experience is just invaluable, as you say, in those situations. Now, if I can ask you about the other programme, which I suppose in some ways pales into insignificance when you talk about WRC, but the BRC, which is back with a bang, and obviously Elfin and yourself are there with, obviously, teammates to Max Vatanen. How does that feel to be kind of almost, you know, I've seen some tweets over the weekend and stuff with regard to some people saying, yeah, anybody who's thinking that they're going to have an easy time in BRC when Elfin's taking that amount of time out of the best in the world are going to have a struggle. How does it feel to go there with that kind of target on your back?
Well, a little bit of pressure, I suppose, but no, we're really excited about the British Championship, with it being revamped, and looking forward. Obviously, the Mid Wales is our home event, if you like. I'm only sort of 20 minutes away from Newtown, and Elvin's about 35 minutes, I think. So yeah, it's going to be good. Obviously, it is going to be a bit of a benchmark for everybody, like, you know, be coming from the World Championship for the last 2 years where he's shown really good speed in places. You know, I think it'll be great for these younger guys in the British Championship to have somebody to aim at like that, because it's not very often they can go up against these kind of guys in that, you know, especially in the same sort of machinery as well.
I think back in the day, it was always everybody kind of had, almost like Mark Higgins, and funnily enough, probably Elfin's dad, Gwyndaf, was the benchmark, you know, even kind of 6 or 7 years ago, still, you know, in an Evo 9 back, you know, when they were still running four-wheel drive cars, that those two were the benchmarks that the younger drivers were chasing. So I suppose it makes me feel old to think about Elfin being the man that everyone's going to chase, to be honest with you. But I'm with you. I think it's going to be mega, mega exciting. And as I say, to have somebody like Elfin there, I think is only going to help and give it credibility as well.
Well, for sure. I mean, you know, and I think he will draw quite a few other drivers in as well, ones that are actually looking for the challenge. And the thing for the younger guys who maybe haven't got quite so much experience, going up against somebody like Elfin or even the faster guys in the national series and stuff will always help progress the speed on, because they'll, you know, keep working harder, hopefully, just to try and make up the gaps.
Yeah. Absolutely. Now, I've got to ask you one last thing before I let you go, because I know it's daddy daycare at the moment in the Parry household. So, yeah. How is the little man?
Transformed.
Yeah.
In 11 days, he's like a different little chap. Yeah.
But daddy daycare is back, and it's back in operation, so we're going to leave you to go and look after the little one. But as I say, one last thing, I assume with your calendar and your diary at the moment, this is your prime focus this year, you're not anywhere else?
No, Elfin is prime focus for me, and obviously we've got to hopefully try and get the job done in the World Championship for M-Sport and with the new R5. So, yeah, and as well for the British Championship with the D-Max. So, hopefully, we're going to have a lot of success this year.
What's the other WR round you're going to be out on, Craig?
At the moment, it's just Sweden.
Right.
But hopefully, Sweden goes to plan then. Hopefully, we'll carry on with the whole championship after that. But we just need to wait and see what Malcolm has in store for us, really.
Fantastic. Listen, very best of luck. Pass on my best to Elfin. And as I say, mate, really, really, I'm just so, so pleased to see you get that result. And it's been a pleasure to watch. You've won stuff as you've gone along, but I'm assuming that's one of the biggest problem moments, being on a Monte Carlo ramp as winners of WRC2. I guess that must be the biggest thing, surely.
Yeah, it was a nice feeling, especially with being at a debut with Elfin, and obviously with M-Sport, my first time with with the factory team like that, it was a special feeling getting onto that ramp for sure.
This is Absolute Rally with Tony Simpson and Ryan Champion. Team Coordinate, your perfect travel partner for all your European, Manx and Irish motorsport travel. Whether you're a competitor, marshal or a motorsport fan, we have the connections and discounts available for ferry travel to and from the UK. Team Coordinate, we can cater for individuals, teams or group bookings. Working with organisers of race, rally and classic touring events, we take away the hassle of travel with bikes, cars, trailers and trucks, accompanied or unaccompanied. Team Coordinate. Call Dane or Donna now on 441904-766-787 or email us on info@teamcoordinate.com.
So now the last few chats from Autosport Show from a couple of weeks ago, and I thought it was relevant. It was good to have Howard Davis, who is MC of the stand for Wales Rally GB and also for the BRC, and obviously very, very experienced man, worked in the World Rally Championship for several teams on the hospitality side and things like that, but more famously, he was Gwyndaf Evans' co-driver back in the day, back in my favourite period of the British Rally Championship, which was F2. So he seemed a very fitting person to talk to about how the new championship was looking and how it was going to unfold. And we also caught up with David Higgins and Craig Drew, both at the same time, and hearing all about what's coming up for them this season, and also a little bit more foray into Global Rallycross for David and how Craig Drew works as his spotter. So as I say, it's great. It's a great interview, great to listen to. Also we have Matthias Adelson, who is one of the two drivers who's been put in one of those works Vauxhall Adams for the British Rally Championship this season, and very, very nice man, fantastic history. He's won a fair few things along the way already, and I think it'll be interesting to see how he goes this season. And then we caught up with the man of the moment, it felt like, on the stand, Ben Taylor, who of course is head of IMS and also with the MSA, and a very, very proud man on what they've achieved to put this new championship together, and also with regards to what they've done with Wales Rally GB. So before we finish the show, Ryan and I chatting about Monte Carlo, because we are going to come to that, we thought it'd be quite nice, as I say, sit back, relax and listen to these last few bits and pieces of interviews that I did at Autosport Show. Right, so we're still at Autosport. We've got friends of the show. Well, certainly one friend of the show and his sidekick, because we've never had Craig Drew on before. David Higgins, Craig Drew, welcome to Absolute Rally. It's lovely to see you on the Wales Rally GB stand. Is there some hopes for a return to Wales Rally GB? Is this why you're here?
Well, the main thing obviously is the cars here on display. So we've came here to that, and you know, we're trying to help the British Championship a little bit more than anything, get a bit of promotion for them. Without a doubt, I would love to do some more here, but you know, like I said to someone before, me and Craig are such a small part of the overall scheme of what our team is in America, that you know, what we want to do and what they want to do are not necessarily two different things, but it's who pays for these ideas that we come up with. And you know, we'd love to be out on some of the rallies, we would love to do Wales GB again, but you know, it's not something that's a definite plan by any stretch.
As a former winner of the British Rally Championship, we're all quite passionate about it still. Does this feel good again? Are we getting somewhere close again?
Yeah, I think for me as a driver personally, it's a fantastic championship, and it's been a great championship for a lot of UK drivers. And I'd say this year is the first year for a long, long time where I've actually felt, you know, I really wish I was involved in that, where previous years, not for anyone's fault, but it hasn't interested me. It was something that, you know, I'd been there, done that, ticked the box. There was no real buzz about it. But for now, there really is a great excitement about it. There's some great people doing it, some great brands supporting it. So, you know, it's got all the ingredients now to succeed again like it did back in the heyday.
Fantastic. Well, listen, we'll come to your calendar for this year now. I've noticed you've got a little bit of facial hair like myself. You're preparing for the cold rallies. When are we going to see David Higgins back behind the wheel?
There's actually a good story for the facial hair. We're having a new bathroom fitted. And I've actually got no shaver charger plug, so I thought, sod it, I'll just carry on as I am a bit. And the first event we go to is obviously minus whatever, it's really, really cold, so I'm not doing the snowdrift this year. It'll be the first time I've missed it for a long time, but the team are, Craig's going to be there co-driving with Pukulasak, one of our GRC drivers, during his first event, and then we'll start our defence of our championship in 100 Acre Wood in March now. So, but between then there'll be some testing with some rallycross and different things, and I'm going out to the rally to be the mentor and try and help keep these boys on the road.
Wow, we'll bring in Craig at this point. So you're going from, I had a very interesting conversation with somebody else before, kind of off the record, is it easier to make a circuit stroke rallycross driver a rally driver or a rally driver a rallycross driver? Now you're going to know the answer to that question in probably about 3 weeks time, but leading up to that, how are you feeling about it now, Craig?
Yeah, definitely, I'll be able to tell you after Snowdrift whether I've still got clean shoes or whether they're covered in snow and I got a shovel in my hand. But I mean, I've always, maybe I'm a bit biased, but I've almost always viewed rallying as the ultimate motorsport, the most difficult motorsport you could possibly do. So from my point of view, I'd always say you could probably make a rally driver, a rally cross driver, easier than the other way around. But, you know, like I said, we'll know the answer to that in a couple of weeks.
Fantastic. Well, I love the term rally cross because it's so definitive. Coming to a rally driver that is going to do rally cross, do you get cross as a rally driver with what goes on? Because normally you're not having other cars around you. I see some of what those boys are doing. Does it get a bit agitated out there?
Yeah, it really is. Like, if you can imagine pulling a hand grenade and chucking it in someone's pocket and just seeing when it's going to go off, that is what it's all about. This, you know, the race is so short, you can't really do much about it. And, you know, some of the driving standard is, you know, what they accept is also not ideal. So for coming from a sport where, you know, if Craig and I put in a massive amount of work, do loads of research before the rally, study our videos, make sure we do a good test, have a good car set up, you go in a rally, all the control comes from within what we're doing ourselves. Then you go to that sport where, you know, you can have all the best setup, you can have a great car, you go to the start line and the other people decide to change it for you. So it is mega frustrating, but you have to go into it with a way of, you're going to win races you don't deserve to win and you're going to lose races you do deserve to win. If you do enough events, that over a season will pan out and it probably has quite an even balance. The hard thing for me in the past is when you've only gone and done one or two events a year, you know, you can have easily two bad events and you've got nothing to show for it. So, you know, if I'm going to do rallycross, I'd like to do a bit more, so you've got time to
and to
let some of the luck come your way a little bit as well, really.
And to get revenge.
Yeah,
a little bit of revenge every once in a while. Nothing worse than being punted off and that's your only race of the year. So.
To be fair, I actually think some of my revenge came out in GB rally. I actually, looking back, I feel sorry for the way I actually overtook some of the slower cars. But I just come back from being put in a wall at 100 miles an hour in Vegas, and the next car I saw was a Citroen junior driver that had to have a little bit of a nudge in a few places. So that was I'm not against the racing side because I did 10 years of high level kart racing before I went into rallying, so I'm not against that side of it, but it's so different. The rallycross cars, is a professional driver, I don't think you could jump in a vehicle that's more fun to drive than a rallycross car. If you take away all of the other people and just drive the cars, they are absolutely amazing to drive. This they're sideways, loads of power, loads of grunt, they are brilliant. The problem is when you then throw another 9 drivers into the pack, you don't get to drive them as far as you want to drive them a lot of the time, and that's where the problem comes in, really.
Do you think the other thing is as well, and again, I've never raced, but is there an element of, again, you sat on the start line, you know where you're going to go, but all of a sudden everybody else's mindset comes in, so your best laid plans of mice and men automatically go out the window as soon as the flag drops?
If you know you've got a car that's really, really fast and you're confident you're going to get the start and go into the first corner first, you can really put a bit of planning into your race. The reality is, though, you know, we sit there and have all these meetings and our engineers have all these plans of what you're going to do. And I know as a driver that, you know, even when Craig's there as my spotter thing, you can have all the best plan in the world, but to say it goes to shit before the first corner would be a lie. It happens within 10 metres of leaving the start line. There really isn't a lot of planning. You can, sure, the more experience you get and the better your car is, if you can qualify out front and get out of trouble, then that's the key. But, you know, the tolerances, you know, a really good standing start is 1.75 seconds from 0 to 60. a bad standing start is 2.1 seconds. So that's the difference between whether you get out of trouble or you get into it. And a tiny bit of wheel spin, a bit of a reaction thing, and you know, things can go against you.
Well, you've kind of just answered the question, because you're even stood next to his ear, Craig. You're almost like, are you, when David's rally cry, are you like an expectant parent on the side, because you've just chipped in? Yeah, when somebody punches you off.
He's an arsehole, actually. He abuses me as if anyone that hits me or something. It's like Craig's competitiveness is,
I can see it just stood here,
is very, very high, let's put it that way. So yeah, if something goes slightly wrong, the disappointment in his voice, you don't have to see him or hear, you can just tell straight away.
It's strange because you know, even obviously with rallycross, I'm not in the car, I actually get just as passionate if we win or lose, and get just as disappointed if we lose than if it was a rally. And it's strange, I never thought I'd feel like that, but I am a very, very competitive person. But going back to the issues of drivers taking other drivers out, I think the rules in America certainly don't help in the fact that everything is determined on position, whereas in the World Rallycross everything is determined on time. So very often, if you don't make that move into the first corner, you've missed your chance, your race is over. So you've almost got this like all or nothing mentality into the first corner, which obviously doesn't help.
Fantastic. Well, Craig, you still got to get over there. Yeah, you've got to calm him down, hold him back. Listen, boys, you've been great friends of the show, and David, you're more than welcome to come on. You know that. And Craig, we've not had you on yet, and now we've had you on. Now, no. Yeah. I want to get you the moments after the next rallycross event, because it's going to be priceless. Absolutely.
I think you should get him on after the snowdrift, because I'm sure there'll be some stories for that.
Yeah. Let's do it.
After 10 minutes of shoveling snow, you'll probably see.
You'll see what his real gym workout's like, and see how much snow he can shovel in a space of time.
Nice one, boys. Listen, it's great to see you in Five Fettle. Best of luck for the year, and we'll catch you up throughout the year.
Cheers, mate.
Cheers, chaps.
This is Absolute Rally with Tony Simpson and Ryan Champion.
And we're caught up with Howard Davis, former co-driver in the British Rally Championship, of course, for Gwyndaf. We've been talking to Elvin a little bit earlier on, and Howard, in your role of MC, almost ambassador here at the British Rally Championship, how are you feeling about it now? Because you were in its heyday, and people tended to forget that back in the day. The F2 days, for me, were personally the heyday. I don't know how you've seen them.
Well, yeah, they were the heyday. I mean, we won the championship in 96. We competed quite heavily from the 90s, all the way through the 90s, effectively, Group N. And then the Seat days, you know, where we came second twice. So, yeah, heavily involved in those days. And you always think that when you were competing was the heyday. But if you look back before that, the Escort Mark II days when Vatanen was here and the Flying Finns came over, you know, they were the heydays for me. And that's when I remember going to watch Rothmans and Opel and TSM V8s and the like. But I think the champ, you know, the championship's got its place. It was the place to come, but then the World Championship evolved, and when we were in F2, you know, you wanted to do the British Championship to the next step to do F2 in the world. Now things have changed slightly with the D-Max Series, the World Championship, but and the BRC's gone through a bit of a lean period, but things come in peaks and troughs, and you look at the BT, the touring cars, normally when the touring cars is on a high, the BRC is on the low, and then it swaps. You know, there's only so much money in the UK that the manufacturers have to put into it. I think it's brilliant what they've done. They've taken a year out to concentrate and develop the championship, and it looks like it's going to come back with a bang, really strong. We don't need to run before we can walk. It can come back as it is. It could start tomorrow, as far as I was concerned. The interest is good. Five cars with the ability to win the rallies. You know, you've got the Fiestas in R5 in Super 2000. You've probably got a Skoda. There's a talk of a Peugeot. You know, you've got other Super 2000 cars as well. So there's a good broad base of cars and drivers. You know, if you get 10 drivers with a possibility to win, fantastic. Then you've got all the other classes as well, all the other structures. So I think actually Ben Taylor's done an exceptional job. The proof will be in the pudding in Newtown. And then Circuit of Ireland, because you know Newton's easy to get to. It's close for a lot of people. I guess when we get to the circuit and Pirelli in Scotland, that's when we'll understand how people and how much commitment they're putting into it.
Well, again, from our point of view, I suppose the heyday for me, it's probably an age thing as well. But I'm just thinking about manufacturer involvement. You think back to, you know, the Seat days. You know, we had Ford, we had Seat, we had Volkswagen, we had Nissan.
97, there were five drivers in different cars vowing to win the championship on the last day of the Manx. Who won the championship?
Mark Higgins.
Who won the rally?
Martin Rowe.
Who went out on the last day? Gwyndaf. Robbie. Gwyndaf in an Escort, Robbie in a
McGann,
and Alistair in the Golf.
Yeah.
Nissan won the rally.
Yeah.
McGann won the championship. So, you know, yeah, definitely. Okay, they were the heydays, but I'm biased because I was in those heydays. But for me, the cars were way, way too scary. Like, you know.
Really?
Oh, you know, a really wound up F2 car downhill is out of control, like, out of control. And more so in the woods, you know, when the back end used to let go in that Escort, we had no idea what was going to happen. And, you know, inevitably, we crashed quite a lot. Like,
I remember seeing the, because that's when I was going out watching, and I remember seeing the wide track Escort for the first time.
Yes.
And I'd never seen anything wide track. The McGann was quite wide, but the Escort, I remember seeing it, I think it was being on Ulster or somewhere like that, and it was almost wider than the stage.
They put it on the ramp and we couldn't get anybody on the ramp beside us to get off the ramp. And when we started the car on the ramp, the whole of the audience ducked because they thought a bomb had gone off, because there was hardly any exhaust on it. Just exhaust came straight out the side. It was incredible. Great days, and I'm so lucky to be involved, and I'm really happy to be an ambassador for them here now, involved with the MSA, with the Go Motorsport and the development program, and to work to promote Wales Rally GB and now the BRC.
Fantastic, Howard. I really do appreciate time. Genuinely, I've wanted to speak to you for a while because I'm such a big fan of those heydays, but it's a pleasure to talk to you, and hopefully we'll talk to you again soon.
Thanks very much, and look forward to seeing you in Newtown on the 5th and 6th.
Thank you.
Team Coordinate, your perfect travel partner for all your European, Manx and Irish motorsport travel. Whether you're a competitor, marshal or a motorsport fan, we have the connections and discounts available for ferry travel to and from the UK. Team Coordinate, we can cater for individuals, teams or group bookings. Working with organisers of race, rally and classic touring events, we take away the hassle of travel with bikes, cars, trailers and trucks, accompanied or unaccompanied. Team Coordinate. Call Dane or Donna now on 441904 766787, or email us on info@teamcoordinate.com.
There's been a big announcement here on the BRC stand with regards to the Vauxhall Junior team, and we're now with one of their drivers, Matthias Adelson, who has got a very, very impressive CV, a 3-time Swedish champion, competed in ERC, and now coming to the British Rally Championship. Matthias, welcome to Great Britain.
Thank you very much. I'm happy to be here.
So, with regard to the British Rally Championship, obviously, it's its big relaunch. It's coming back here for 2016. Is this a tick in the box for a Scandinavian to come and do the British Rally Championship?
Yes, of course. We have seen the news that the BRC is coming back. And actually, I was quite close to entering already 2014 when they cancelled the North Rally Wales. We had to cancellation the entry as well there, so I'm really happy to be back. And you know, we have a past from Sweden to be in British Championship, and now I try to bring it back. And obviously I will try to do the same that the Swede did then.
Yeah, obviously. Now, you've drove the Fiesta R2, that's what you've won some championships back home in. You did ERC last year in the Peugeot 208. Now it's another R2 car. How much do you know about this little thing alongside us, this Adam R2?
I have fighting against it in ERC Junior last year, and I know it's a really quick car. And obviously the driver was really quick as well. So I had a little bit test run on the car in the selection now in Tuesday this week. And I was really impressed of the car. I think the Vauxhall Adam R2 is one of the best in the category for sure.
Fantastic. Now, obviously, you've been announced. Is the program in place now? Do you know when you start testing for Mid-Wales and things like that? Is your diary now suddenly become very full?
Yes, it's starting to be, and we will have a meeting tonight with the team. Of course, this has been very, very short days, and the announcement was yesterday. So the full plan is to do all 7 races and testing including, but exact date, we're not there yet. But hopefully we will try to drive the car as fast as possible, because me and Rob is longing to be in the car.
Absolutely. Are you used to having a teammate? Because it's a very unique thing to have a teammate. Have you had a teammate previously?
No. In Sweden, and obviously in Scandinavia as well, we're running our own team with our own cars, and there is no rental situation or option to do in Scandinavia. So this is the first time for me with a teammate, but I think it's really good because if you want to beat the best, you have to be the best, and you can help each other to be the best. And he has something that he can bring to me, and I would try to bring something to him. Like, we have more gravel experience, he have more tarmac experience, so hopefully we will help each other to be better and better drivers.
Fantastic. So have you done any rallying at all in Great Britain?
Yeah, I did Circuit of Ireland last year.
Of course, with ERC. Yeah. Now, that was an experience, I'm sure. Have you ever done anything like that before?
No, it was amazing. Just to be in Great Britain, all the audience and the atmosphere that this rallying brings to UK, it's amazing. But the roads was amazing to drive. All the hedges and pace was so close to limits all the way, and you never know the corner before you enter the corner, and that's a hard thing with the Circuit of Ireland, but to drive that was an amazing feeling.
Fantastic. Well, listen, congratulations on becoming one of the Vauxhall drivers for the British Rally Championship for 2016. We're going to look very, very interested in what this little Adam can do with a fast Swede in it. Best of luck, and we'll catch up with you throughout the season, I'm sure.
Thank you very much. Looking forward to speak with you again.
Take care. Thank you.
Thank you.
This is Absolute Rally with Tony Simpson and Ryan Champion.
Ben Taylor, MSA, British Rally Championship, Wales Rally GB. The job title's huge, but by the same token, so is the smile. This is mega, isn't it? The launch of the British Rally Championship. There's a buzz, I was said to Ian Campbell before, of course, as your championship manager, there just seems to be, this is the stand where everyone wants to be.
Oh, it's brilliant. We've got this great stand with Wales Rally GB and BRC together this year, and it's just become the home of rallying. Everyone's here on the stand. We've had Ari and Elvin and Max and Higgins, and yeah, everybody's on this stage. Craig Breen came along yesterday just to have a look. You know, everyone wants to be here, and the buzz about rallying, it's not just about the British Rally Championship. People are talking positively about our sport, and God, if there's a job that we have to do as IMS, MSA, with Wales Rally GB and the British Rally Championship, it's about pulling the whole sport up. And if we can do that, and if there's a benefit to the whole sport from the enthusiasm that everybody's got for rallying just at the moment, I mean, we're all going to be in winning clover, aren't we?
I think so. As I say, just being around it, I just don't remember it being like this for a long time. I was talking to Howard Davis about it before, who's been your MC and host and everything, who's ace. Yeah. Howard's ace. I love Howard. But Howard was in that era, which everybody reverts back to Ari's days, and quite rightly, the Mark II sideways and everything else. But for me, as a massive fan, the F2 days, and me and Craig Breen, as our guest host, have waxed lyrical about the F2 days, the British Rally Championship. But to me, it's as close as what it's ever been now to those days for me, the Halcyon days. They were my Halcyon days.
Well, we need to be a little careful. We haven't got the first event underway yet, but certainly the buzz and the excitement is fantastic. And, you know, the manufacturer-driven days of the era you're talking about probably aren't going to come back because things have changed. But if you've got people saying they want to do a championship, to enjoy the crack, to have a really good competition, and to get those cars out there that are going to look absolutely spectacular, that's what it's all about. It's about creating something that people want to be part of, whether they're competitors or fans or sponsors or media. And if everyone wants to be part of it, then that's got to be a good sign.
Fantastic. Listen, we're not going to keep you because you've got a queue of people wanting to talk to you, but I just wanted to say hello. You're a friend of the show, and I know you listen to the show, and before Mid Wales, perhaps we'll have a little bit of a catch up and see where we're at. How many days is it now?
49 and counting.
No pressure. See you soon, Ben.
Cheers, Dan.
This is Absolute Rally with Tony Simpson and Ryan Champion.
And welcome back to Absolute Rally. Obviously, we didn't start the show with Ryan, but I said we were going to finish him. He had a note from his mum why he couldn't be present at the top of the show, so we got him at the end of the show. Hello, Ryan.
Hello, I am here.
I know. It just felt very odd starting the programme without you. I know Jack was there, but it felt really odd not having, you know, my confidant, my right hand, so to speak, which just sounds really dodgy, so I'm going to move on from that. But listen, we're back. It's Rally Monte Carlo, and what a rally it was. We've waxed lyrical already. We've had Craig Parry on, who is, you know, when you talk to somebody, you can actually hear them smile. It was very much like that. And I've known Craig for years. And again, I suppose it's always a bit more personal because you know the guys so well or whatever. But I was just so happy for what him and Elvin did.
Yeah, I mean, they're quite right to smile, aren't they? And probably a wry smile, really, because where Elfyn found himself a couple of months ago after Rally GB and probably on quite a low ebb without a seat in the works team and not really knowing which direction his career was going in, and he's bounced back in the best fashion, hasn't he? I mean, not only did he win WRC2 on Monte Carlo, he was dominant, and every time he had a problem, he had those couple of punctures that set him back, and he just set the times and blew everybody else away. So what a performance on one of the world's most difficult rallies.
I think I said it on last week's programme, and again I actually said it to Craig as well, but there was definitely a steely determination. It was a different Elfyn, and it's actually being spoke about in Motorsport News today. Actually, Colin Clark, obviously a friend of mine, is wrote a piece on it, and it's an excellent piece, and it was very much what I thought when I bumped into Elfyn at Autosport. There's definitely not that shy and retiring. There's definitely a steely determination, and I mentioned it to Craig, and you know, Craig said we were just there to do a job, and you know, as all the guys did, gave great credit to the Ice Note crew. They had obviously Elfyn's dad Gwyndaf and Phil Mills, and as they said, you know, we couldn't have had a better Ice Note crew for the event, and without them, you know, it would have been a lot more difficult, to say the least.
Yeah, and obviously that's a big part of Monte Carlo, is the Ice Note crews, and it's a job that doesn't get really a lot of recognition, and we don't hear about the Ice Note crew or Gravel Note crew really much for the rest of the year. They're present on all the tarmac rallies, but Monte Carlo is where they can really make a difference. But it's quite a skill in itself, because they're passing through maybe an hour before their competing car, and the conditions can change a lot in that hour. Is the dampness on the road going to freeze, or might the ice actually thaw? You certainly don't want to slow your car down unnecessarily, but then you don't want to miss out a caution that could mean the car goes off the road. So it really is a very difficult job, and I think Gwyndaf actually went on record at one point last year and said it was one of the most difficult jobs he's ever done. Probably made harder because it's his son.
Yeah, I was just about to say it must be very difficult to kind of separate, you know, that relationship. Obviously you're a daddy, I'm not yet, but you know, I can't imagine, you know, you'd probably want to put an extra caution in almost, wouldn't you, as opposed to trying to speed him up.
Yeah, I guess you probably would. Yeah, you'd want to make sure you kept him on the road. But having said that, Gwyndaf is still as competitive as any rally driver anywhere in the world, so Gwyndaf hasn't lost that will to win, and I'm sure he wants the same for his son.
Absolutely. Now going obviously to the main field, was there any surprises, any shocks for you?
Any big shocks? I don't know if there was any big shocks. I guess, you know, the great talking point is just how close Chris Meek could push Sebastian Ogier. I mean, was it a shock? Probably not. We know Chris has got the speed, but, you know, to see Chris push Ogier for that long during the rally, and, you know, if it wasn't for his unfortunate retirement, I think he would have pushed him right to the end. So, you know, fantastic performance again to push, you know, without doubt the world's best driver right the way through one of the as we said, the toughest rallies. So, you know, a fantastic performance, and I think it just reflects Chris's growing confidence.
It does. I'm going to contradict myself here with the next two statements, which often happens anyway. One or two people always pointed out to me, I've got two trains of thought, and obviously Chris being on the programme and everything else. Now, I just wonder whether the fact that obviously Ogier's playing a long game for a championship and Chris is doing a limited program, there's no stresses and strains of having to score points and things like that, which has really let him off the leash. Has that, or rather, does that help the situation?
I think Monte Carlo is one of those rallies Ogier wants to win, isn't it? And it's the first rally of the year, and yes, you might still think about the championship, but Ogier wanted to win that rally. So I think Ogier was pushing as hard as he could to win the rally. And like I said, I think being the first rally of the year, he was probably willing to take the chances to do that. So no, I think we saw Ogier at full strength, and I think Meek just just really took the battle to him. But big credit to Stefan Lefebvre as well, Meek's teammate, because he was going well throughout the rally, finished fifth, which is a fantastic result in Monte Carlo any time, and he was also third fastest on the power stage. So, you know, that's a great performance from him too, with his limited experience in a WRC car.
Well, I'll come back to that in a second. Now, I'm going to cut again the contradiction I'm going to have, because I agree with you. I was playing devil's advocate just a little bit there with regards to Chris. But I see, obviously, we all watch the TV coverage and stuff, but I'm convinced, and it's not very often I can say this, and you watch the coverage probably just as much, if not more than me. I thought I seen OJ rattled.
He definitely had a rival. You know, he definitely had a rival that was taking the fight to him, and I think we saw that in the respect that he gave Chris when Chris retired. You know, he said that he was really enjoying the battle, because let's face it, OJ has not had too many battles during the last couple of years, not that have gone to the wire. You know, he's often been a dominant force by the last day of the rally, and I think he was enjoying being pushed to that level. So, you know, it's great to see. Unfortunately, we're maybe not going to see it on too many rallies this year, certainly not from outside the Volkswagen team, but, you know, I guess it bodes well for when Chris gets a new car.
Now, going back to Stefan Leverve, obviously another new boy in a WR car. I just wonder, is this the way now? You know, is it almost these guys who are coming, you know, that making that transition from the R5 car? Obviously, we've seen it with Eric Kamali, which we'll come back to in a second. But, you know, not a great deal of rallies in an R5 car, to be fair, and almost being fast-tracked into a WR car. Is that helping in a strange way, that they're not driving lots of other cars, and perhaps, you know, bad habits is probably the wrong way of putting it. I just wonder whether not having a great deal of data from driving lots of other cars, perhaps even older spec WR cars, wherever it may be, and just really making that natural transition from an R5 into WR, is that now almost, is there almost like a fast tracking process?
Yeah, I think when you look at Leferb, I mean, he has come through the ranks still. You know, he started off in front wheel drive cars and learned his art really in R2 cars, in Twingos, and then moving through Peugeot 207 and 208s. So he did his apprenticeship, if you like, before moving to Citroën with a DS3, initially the front wheel drive one, then the R5 car, and now in a WRC car. So he's definitely done it in the right order, if you like. And I'm still a big advocate for learning your trade in a small underpowered front wheel drive car, learning to drive the wheels off it and then moving on. Obviously that wasn't what Andreas Mikkelsen did. He did the complete opposite, but like I say, Leferb has come through the ranks, and I think that experience of building up seems to have served him well.
Now, as I say, we've just touched upon his compatriot, who's obviously at M Sport, who took Elvin's seat, Eric Kamali. What can we gain, or what can we glean from his performance?
Well, I mean, firstly, in terms of he's off, it was very unfortunate, wasn't it? I mean, you know, I did see some comments in various places, or, you know, he's come into the team and he's crashed out. But when you actually look at his crash, I mean, he was so unlucky. He just got dragged off the road, didn't he? He just passed Kubica's car, and he was about 100 metres further down the road, and he literally fell off the edge of the road. But it did an awful lot of damage to the car. He was put in a sensible performance. He was, you know, he was well inside the top 10, but then he had an unfortunate off. I think we've just got to say, let's see what happens on the coming rallies. I think it's probably a bit early to draw conclusions, but it was certainly an unfortunate start for him.
It was always going to be tough, wasn't it? You know, there's no WRC round that's easy to start. Everyone always seems to be the toughest one, but Monte Carlo is just, it's the most changeable event of them all. And as I say, I think while he was probably rubbing his hands with delight with the thought of doing Monte Carlo on a full factory seat, I guess there's always that thing in the back of your mind thinking, I wish it was an easier one to start with, but still, there you go. Now, we've done this kind of arse about face, but we're now kind of 10 minutes into our normal chat, and we've not even mentioned Hyundai yet.
Hyundai corner. Yeah, it was an interesting one, wasn't it? Hyundai have done a huge amount of testing with the new i20. They should have been relatively well prepared for the rally, and yet the first day was a real struggle for them. They couldn't find a balance with the car, they couldn't find a setup, and then suddenly halfway through the rally, they changed something on it, they bang on the pace, and they're setting fastest times. So it was an interesting one, because like I said, you'd think they'd had the experience before the rally to have the correct setup, but they did seem to struggle. But the good thing is, for the championship, the car showed a strong pace during the rally. They got a podium with the car. Sordo was second fastest, very close to Ogier on the power stage. So it does seem that the speed's there. Just interesting that they couldn't quite find the sweet spot early on.
I think there was a lot said, and I know we had Rich Milner on last week, who was talking about Elvin's test, funnily enough. Their pre-Monty test was very snowy, and what I can glean from a few guys I know over at High and Die is that they also had the similar situation, that their shakedown, their test, if you like, pre-Monty was very much a snow-based, and they got a lot more snow than what they were expecting.
Yeah, I mean, that could definitely have affected their plans, but obviously they have been testing this car for, what, a year now? So, it could have been that's what affected it. Like I said, you don't very often see Volkswagen turning up to a rally and struggling for setup, do you?
No, not at all. Not at all. Now, I guess this sets us up quite nicely for the year. Now, we were concerned where competition perhaps could come from, you know, throughout the year for Sebastian Ogier. Obviously, of late, his teammate Gary Matty has been, you know, probably the nearest man to push him. I just want to talk about Gary Matty because obviously there was the incident, and I don't know whether you've seen the incident, what your take on it was. What did you take from that?
Unfortunate incident, wasn't it? I mean, he obviously went off the road, he went down the ditch, he then kept his footing, got out of the ditch and clipped a cameraman who was busy trying to pick his camera up. It's a difficult one. Did he see the cameraman? There's only Yari Matty can answer that one. You know what it's like as well as I do. When you go off the road in a rally car, you don't even have to go off the road. When you're in mud, you're in water like that, it's very easy to have your vision obscured. It's no different to going through a puddle in your road car. You can lose vision for a second or a couple of seconds, and that can be the time it takes for an incident like that to happen. It's like I said, there's only Yari Matty can answer that. You would like to think if he'd known he'd hit somebody, he would have stopped there and then, because I think knowing Yari a little bit, he would have done. So I can understand that he maybe didn't fully realise what had happened because he simply didn't see him. But I think the photographer should have been keener to get out of the way rather than picking his camera up.
Now, we spoke about this at the top of the show, Jack and I, and I had concerns for Yari with regards to this incident. I'm with you. I think it's a very, very unfortunate incident. I think you could argue, spectator safety obviously is paramount. We always have to focus on that, but also things do happen, and there's only so much you can do when you're competing and somebody's on the outside of a corner who is taking photographs, who is, you know, doing it for fun as opposed to being a professional photographer, so they haven't got the tabard on and things like that, and perhaps they may be inexperienced on those events but I guess from looking at, I've looked at it so many times, and you would think that being the other side of that, almost like a gully, wasn't it? Thinking you'd be the other side of that gully would almost save you, but it's almost the way he bounced out of that gully is probably what unsighted him.
Yeah, and the other thing is he went up the gully, up the ditch for quite a long way, and that is the problem with rallying, isn't it? That is the problem with spectator safety. There's two issues here. Firstly, from what we saw from Monte Carlo, the spectator safety simply wasn't good enough. It's always been an issue on Monte Carlo for many years. It still didn't seem like it was what we now expect, what we have to do in this country is, as rallies, we have to be very, very careful with it. And there's still lots of images of spectators in bad places in Monte Carlo. But I think the second thing is, like you said, that particular incident happened where you maybe wouldn't expect a car to end up. You know, because Yari Matty went up the ditch so far, he was maybe 100 metres after the corner by the time the incident occurred, or certainly 50 metres after. So that's the issue, isn't it? You know, where we think our safe places aren't necessarily, and unfortunately, to a degree, we can minimise the risk for spectators, but we can't ever get rid of it, because if a steering arm breaks in a straight line, you don't know where the car's going to end up. So whilst the spectator safety simply wasn't good enough, unfortunately, we will always get incidents, and that's just a nature of the sport.
Now, the other thing which I kind of picked up upon, and I mentioned it last week's programme, I spoke to Jack at the top of this programme about it, is Yari Matti, and again, I was, as I said to Jack, you know, I know he's been full of cold and everything else, but to me, I almost feel like he's almost regressed into that number two role a little bit, you know, already kind of admitting and things like that. Now, in fairness, Jack's argument against that was earlier, as I say in the programme, was the fact that, you know, perhaps, you know, Yari Matti has got a reputation for going in a bull in a china shop and you know, being 25 points down very early on in the season, and maybe he just wanted to get points on the board for the first time to set him up for the year, which I think is a very valid argument.
Yeah, I think Monte Carlo is always one of those rallies where you need a little bit of luck, don't you, certainly. And it is one where anything can happen, and historically a lot of people have had incidents. So it is certainly one where you'd maybe want to look at getting solid points, and whatever result comes your way, well, so be it. Having said that, for Yari Matti now, he's got Sweden, and if any rally other than Finland is his rally to go and prove his speed, how quick he is, it's Rally Sweden, isn't it? So, you know, he I'm sure will be looking at Sweden thinking, right, I have to win this, and to assert himself against his teammate, to a certain degree he does, or at least he needs to be faster than Ogier in Sweden, or else, like you said, he will naturally already fall into that number two spot. So Sweden is a big rally for him.
So Sweden is up next. Now, before we have a parting of the ways, I just want to very quickly blast through some of the other notable pieces of news, certainly from things that we've spoke about, is the new R5 Fiesta, which obviously is what Elvin's in, this evolution version of it, apparently orders from after Monte Carlo and during Monte Carlo rocketed, which I can well believe. And but Escalapi's come out and saying, well, no, we're not too worried. It was one result, and you know, we'll still be back on it. Can you see these upgrades to the M Sport car being on, at least getting that Fiesta on par with what we know will be a very, very solid and always evolving package of the Skoda R5?
I think it definitely has. You know, even from Monte Carlo, yeah. Lappi might have said that, and I'm sure he would from his point of view. But Elfin's performance to come out and to set such consistently quick times on not only the snowy stages but also the tarmac stages is fantastic for the future of the Fiesta. It's fair to say it did look like the Fabia was a better package than the Fiesta. It looked like it was a little bit quicker. But I think M Sport have got something like 30 horsepower more out of the car now, which is a huge step in terms of modern rallying, you know, with air restrictors. To find that sort of power is huge. And yes, okay, we might have to see a little bit more balanced performances over the year, but it does definitely look like the R5 Fiesta, the upgrades have worked. And obviously linking several things together here. Obviously Max Vatanen is going to be competing in the British Championship in an R5 Fiesta, but what a performance he put in Monte Carlo in an old R2 Fiesta, the old 1.6 car, you know, setting times well inside the top 20. I think he finished about 25th, 26th overall. Stunning performance from him, so it'll be interesting to see how he gets on against Elvin in the British Championship in identical cars.
Well, that links us very nicely. Obviously, the announcements which we broke earlier in this programme, and also obviously it came out in Motorsport News today. Ian Campbell very, very kindly privy us to this information that the British Rally Championship has got a terrestrial TV package. It is back where old farts like you and I will remember it, Ryan, on a Saturday on Channel 4.
Yeah, and the good news just continues for the BRC, doesn't it? And long may it continue. Fantastic that it's got terrestrial TV coverage. I mean, people have been happy about that for WRC, let alone BRC. So for BRC to get back on terrestrial TV is big news, because it's always difficult getting sponsorship in rallying. Generally, we lose out to our racing cousins. It's a lot easier to get guests and to do hospitality when the cars are circuit-based. We always struggle for sponsorship as it is, particularly when we've maybe only got satellite TV coverage. So terrestrial TV, not only great for the exposure of the championship, but it also helps build a genuine case to get sponsors on board.
I think the other thing is as well, of course, which as much as we, as you say, we are racing cousins, as you've just referred to, over here in the UK, is that Channel 4 will be carrying Formula 1 coverage this year. So they are going into motorsport in a big way. And I suppose, you know, as much as it pains me to say it, the biggest show on earth when it comes to motorsport has always been Formula 1.
Yeah, I mean, it has. And, you know, there's been lots of rumours over the years that that Bernie was trying to push rallying away a little bit when it was going through its successful periods to keep Formula One on top. Whether that's true or not, who knows? But we're always at the detriment of Formula One in rallying, because most of the money does go that way. And often if car manufacturers are going into F1, then obviously all the budget goes in that direction as well. But like you said, the fact that both F1 and BRC are on Channel 4 is, you know, is good. Hopefully we might pick up some casual viewers to BRC from their F1 coverage.
Yeah, so, and the other thing, obviously, it's also going to be on BT Sport. Apparently, they're going to have a slightly longer package on BT Sport as well. So it's kind of ticking both boxes again. Round of applause for both Ben Taylor and for Ian Campbell, and as you say, for shaping this championship rather up into being where I think every driver currently in the UK and probably in Europe, when you start looking at the internationals' names that are now starting to register, want to be. But that brings us very, very nicely round to, have you got any other business you wish to discuss, Ryan?
Well, one other thing, I guess, that popped up in the media recently was that obviously Chris Harris is going to be a presenter of the new Top Gear show, and we're also going to see him on the British Rally Championship in a Toyota GT86. So that's fantastic news again for the championship, isn't it?
Yeah, you know, I think I was at Autosport when that news was announced. I wasn't quite fully sure of how the package was going to work. I always raise an eyebrow when I see, you know, manufacturer announced or whatever it may be, because you always want to scratch that little bit further beyond the surface and see what it is all about. Not in a negative way, but, you know, manufacturers, you know, it's such a big claim to make that a manufacturer is coming back. And, you know, obviously it's a Toyota Motorsport car, which is going to be run, I think, by a preparation company down in Cornwall, whose name escapes me at the moment.
Rally Prep, I think.
Rally Prep, that's them. Yeah, you know, which is great. And obviously, it's come from, I'm led to believe it's come from Toyota Motorsport, and they're running it, obviously, on the events. I don't know, do you know Chris at all?
I don't really. I don't know him. I know him in passing, but no, I don't really know him. But obviously, a good driver. We've all seen it on his videos. He's he spent quite a lot of time behind the wheel of a Tuttle Porsche. If anybody hasn't seen the footage of him testing the RGT on gravel, they'll see he can drive a car on gravel as well. So be interesting to see how he goes. There's probably not a direct comparison for that car, quite honestly, so it might be difficult to draw any conclusions of how the car goes or how Chris goes in it, because it's a you know, an unusual package in modern rallying, but nice to see something different out nonetheless.
I only had this conversation with someone the other day as where the car is being pitched. You know, who is it being pitched at? Is it going to be pitched at a young up and coming driver? Probably not. It's going to be probably more pitched towards the guys that perhaps have rallied rear wheel driving in yesteryear, and they still want to do big international rallies. I think that's probably the easiest way of kind of pigeonholing, as much as I hate to pigeonhole things. That's my understanding of it, really, is that, you know, it's an international rear wheel drive car that, you know, your more affluent guys can perhaps go and do, you know, a WRC or an ERC round in and you know, still have the fun in rear wheel drive.
And probably sensible running costs as well. I mean, that's got to be one of the key things with it, I would have said, you know, that you can run the car affordably. We all know the current story of how expensive it can be to run a DS3 R3 Citroen, for example. So I think that's one of the aims of this project, is it to be fun and reliable. And actually, some brilliant footage of Patrick Snyers on one of the Belgian championship rounds at the end of last year. He certainly seemed to be enjoying himself in it.
Are we going to see Ryan Champion in one?
Well, I don't know.
I wouldn't ever rule anything out. As I was saying to you last night, I definitely fancy a crack at the Pirelli this year. It'll be 10 years, amazingly. I can't believe it's 10 years, but it'll be 10 years since I managed to win the Pirelli, so it would be nice to get back out on the Pirelli Rally, but that would involve finding a car. So,
which is the third round of the British Rally Championship, of course.
Just coincidentally, yeah. But let's see. I'd like to do it, but, you know... So
we need to find Ryan Champion. I think it's going to be an Evo 10 or an M15, perhaps. Or an M14 you'd get away with.
Yeah, to be honest, I'd drive anything if it was reasonably priced and we could do a deal. I have to say, I think a good Group N car would go well in the championship this year. You know, I don't just mean from that point of view on that one particular rally, but we see all the talk of R5 cars and Super 2000 cars, but they're incredibly expensive to run. You know, I've had this conversation with a couple of drivers who were talking about running Evo 9s in the championship, and I think even a good Evo 9 could be in the top 10 every rally, and you know, not so far away in the championship at the end of the year. So for me, unless you've got a big budget, I think you know, you could still get some good results in a Group N car.
I almost feel like you're talking yourself into this.
I wish. I'm about £100,000 short of talking myself into it at the minute, so there's no real worries of that. Certainly if an opportunity came along, then I wouldn't need asking twice.
And we need to get some posters made up. Find Ryan and Evo for the Pirelli Rally. I'm sure there'll be somebody out there that wants to see you on the 10th anniversary of you winning it, doing that rally again. Let's see what we can do.
Other than me, you mean?
Yeah, other than you, probably you, Gemma, Finley, probably your mum and dad, me. Yeah. Probably that. I'll back you on that. Right, that is the end of our second programme back in 2016. We will be back, of course, next week. I hope you're enjoying the slightly longer version of the shows. We're not quite as disciplined, probably, with the time, but this programme has been probably a little bit extra long due to the fact that I've also got some bits and pieces still from, you've now listened to, obviously, from Autosport show. So I hope you've enjoyed the bits and pieces we did from Autosport. But we will be back to a slightly more compact version of the programme with Ryan and myself and obviously various guests. We've got a couple of people that we've got lined up coming up. We're going to have Dan Barrett, who's going to be joining us, of course. Elvin's old co-driver is now involved at Toyota project with Gazoo Racing, which I'm fascinated to hear more about. And we're also hoping the aforementioned Martin Rowe in last week's programme might come on and have another chat with us as well and talk about all things rally and being a world champion and what it brings and where his life is now. But yeah, we've got lots more bits and pieces coming up. We're also going to try and get back Guy Wilkes as well. I think it'll be quite interesting to get his take on the new British Rally Championship, and you never know, might see him back out on the Pirelli as well. You could reaffirm that rivalry, right?
Well, the nice thing is it's getting a lot of people interested, so that's good news all around, isn't it?
Absolutely. Listen, good to catch you up, mate, and we'll catch you up next week.
We'll do. Speak to you then.
Thanks a lot, and as I say, thanks for downloading the programme, guys. You know where we live, at @absolute_rally on Twitter, and if you want to find us on Facebook, it's facebook.com/absoluterally. Drop us a line if you want to get in touch, and as I say, thanks so much for listening. I'll speak to you next week.